As always, the Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Ed Morse is rolling out the red carpet in 2018, and right now, during their 2018 red carpet sales event, lease a 2018 ATS sedan for a new low payment, just $279 a month, zero down, or get 0% financing 60 months and up to $19,000 off all remaining 2017s. Kick off your new year in a new Cadillac from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit edmorsecadillactampa.com. See the dealer for all the details. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, you can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. See the dealer for all the details on that, edmorsecadillactampa.com and edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. Here we are, Tuesday, January 16th. We've just heard those fantastic offers from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, and it's the Ira Kaufman Podcast starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz, joined by Lee DeCamper. We're JoeBucksFan.com. We thank you for listening every single week religiously here at JoeBucksFan.com. Twice a week, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. It never ends. How are you, Ira?
I'm doing well, my friend. It's Shrine Week, Stephen. It's Shrine Week. And you two schlemiels are trekking down to Tropicana Field. You're in search of Dirk Cutter. You're in search of Jason Light. I wish you the best of luck, my friend. By the way, am I still hanging out in Google Play over there? Am I still on the charts, Stephen?
You're still on the charts, doing your thing, Ira.
It's been going for months now. This ain't no fluke over here.
And I'm sorry, when you mentioned that it was Shrine Week,
Shrine Week.
I thought that meant you would go into your living room and stare at your poster of Bette Midler, and that's your shrine.
We know. Margaret, Bette Midler, Barbara Streisand.
One of these days he's going to start talking about Marlene Dietrich.
Oh, I'm not going back that far. Betty Davis.
Mae West. Here you go, Ira. This will boost your morale. I was checking Saturday night on Google Play, maybe because everybody's hung up on a certain word Trump used the other day that I used all the time, even about my hometown.
You're not calling one buck place that phrase, are you?
No, but the way the record is, I imagine some people have.
Go ahead.
At any rate, checking Google Play, Stephanopoulos and Michael Savage have skyrocketed. Oh. You were doing battle with them.
Oh.
They've skyrocketed. They're in the top five of Google Play, but... Here's the but. Your podcast is the number one sports podcast. Not just football, number one sports podcast on Google Play.
I don't understand what's going on, but I love it over there, Isbitz.
Well, Ira, got to burst your bubble as we sit here.
Oh, here you go. I tried to build you up, and Isbitz beat you down.
That's the yin and the yang, and he's always the yang.
I got to keep you in order here, Ira. As we sit here now, yes, you're still top 22. But I'm showing you're the fourth sports podcast.
Oh,
Who am I behind?
On the All Charts podcast, Colin Coward's ahead of you. Adrian Wojnarowski, whatever his name is.
NBA guy.
And
yeah, NBA, yeah.
There's some other football thing.
That shows how it fluctuates. Like, wow. You were number 20, if I remember right. But I checked it Saturday night, like about 1 o'clock in the morning. And you're the number one sports podcast there.
Let's keep this thing going, Isbitz, because later in this podcast, you're going to be telling me about some guy that happened to be... listening in to the Ira Kaufman podcast and had a couple of comments to make. So we'll address that later.
We'll get to that. But of course, playoff football, what a glorious weekend of football it was. A lot of fun. Of course, we make our picks here every Thursday, usually during regular season. It's all about the Bucks game, but we've been making playoff picks. Now you are 6-2 in your playoff picks. Congratulations.
Thank
over
you, my friend.
Through these NFL playoffs. Lee and I are 3-5. So
that's a big, big lead. That's called the big, big lead over there, Steve. And Javier's keeping track. You know that.
I know in our pre-production meeting for the podcast, you insisted this be the number one topic of the day, your 6-2 record. So there you go. Congratulations.
And later this week, we'll be making our championship game predictions, right, Steven?
Yes, absolutely, on Thursday's podcast. But it's Tuesday, Ira, so you know what? You watch those playoff games. Just give me your most important takeaways from the playoffs.
Shocked that the Jags could go into Pittsburgh and beat them down like that. You know I'm going to be on the Mad Dog later this week on Sirius Radio, Channel 82. And he's on Mike Tomlin's, he's on the bandwagon, but the death march for Mike Tomlin for years. And I've always defended Mike Tomlin. He goes, you like him because he was on Gruden's staff and you got to know him. Well, Tomlin has a heck of a regular season record. He's won a Super Bowl. But I'll tell you, Steve, I'm going to have trouble defending Mike Tomlin on Wednesday. I don't think I can. He had a bad day. Steelers weren't ready, Steve, when the game began. Got hit in the mouth, 14-0. Physicality, which we talked about all season with the Bucs. The Steelers are known for it. And the Jaguars were more physical. If you would have told me that Roethlisberger would throw 5 touchdown passes against a defense as good as Jacksonville, and the Steelers wouldn't win that game at home, that would have been preposterous. Absolutely preposterous that they could strafe the Jaguars for that many points and not win the game. Yeah, are you crazy? Yeah. One more point I want to make about the Jags game, and I'll let Lee chime in. I believe their offensive coordinator, gentlemen, is Nate Hackett. Am I wrong?
It is Nathaniel Hackett.
Nathaniel Hackett, I believe, was on Gruden's staff. Maybe quality control, whatever. He's Paul Hackett's son.
Chucky's coaching tree right there.
Chucky's coaching tree. Now, Nate Hackett could be an offensive coordinator in this league for the next 10 years, and he may not call a better game than he did on Sunday. And by that I mean, and this is a note for everybody. What I thought was tremendous was the Jags remained aggressive, even though they had the lead. All game they had the lead. But they were aggressive. They took shots downfield, even with Blake Bortles as their quarterback. They took shots downfield. A lot of times they fell incomplete. But towards the end of the game, he hit a big one. He hit a 50-yarder. Also, that play-action pass was a tremendous call that set up that was Jacksonville's final touchdown. I love the aggressiveness that Jacksonville played with all game. They didn't go into a shell. And ultimately, I think the feeling was, hey, this is Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, and Bell. They're going to score their points. Mm-hmm. We have to keep scoring. Everybody should remember that.
And Brown's is a wonderful wide receiver. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah. He might be number two to Jerry Rice and guys I've seen.
Whoa.
He may be that good. He may be in Randy Moss territory.
Wow.
Yeah, he's that good.
Well, he makes some spectacular catches, just unbelievable catches.
Did you ever think that Pittsburgh could score 42 points and not win that game against Jacksonville?
Absolutely not. Not against Jacksonville, no. You'd think it'd be a blowout for Pittsburgh. Not the other way around. Well, it wasn't a blowout, but still. But this goes to Isbitt's boy, Marone. Isbitt's been on Marone's bandwagon.
Yeah, he sure has.
For years. Matter of fact, Marone made you money, which makes you even more.
That's 2 years in a row, because Lee, last year, wasn't he on Atlanta? Remember, the Bucs beat Atlanta game one, and I said, they're not a very good team.
I'm only good at picking the hot team, right? But that's always good for wagering, because you're only going to bet what you consider your best bet to be.
In 2016, it was the Falcons.
Big picture, I don't know. But yeah, I'm two years in a row.
Yeah, two years in a row, Lee. But, you know, what struck you about the Jags' victory over there, Lee?
Well, actually, the fact that Pittsburgh put 42 on him. Is the defense really that good? Granted, Pittsburgh has, you know, got weapons up and down the lineup. But, you know, everybody was talking about Jaguars defense. Well, they gave up 42 points. So are they that good? I mean, they're good, don't get me wrong. But that's not what I call it. Would that happen to the Bucs? The glory years of the Bucs. I think it happened once.
Clay Campbell show you anything, Mr. DeKemper?
Well, it showed me the powers that be at the Bucs made a massive mistake and not just saying, throwing caution in the wind and signing the guy. I think that's obvious.
Guys like that don't show up in free agency very often. They do not.
No.
That's the bare fact. They do not.
The more I think about it, the Bucs are in a world of hurt. You know, defensive end, this goes to a whole big sermon here, and I don't want to do that. But at any rate, a soliloquy is a better word. As you said, defensive ends, good defensive ends, don't come available at free agency very often. And the Bucs have shown me, at least the current defensive coaching staff, and this, yeah, I guess it is a knock on Mike Smith. I hate to say it, but I gotta be fair. I gotta be honest with myself. They've shown zero ability to develop an edge rush, especially with a young guy. And cornerback is the same way. Look what happened to Hargraves. Look what happened to Ryan Smith. They couldn't even figure out if Ryan Smith was a safety or a corner. So Light is going to have to go bananas in free agency to bring in veteran guys, established guys, because otherwise I'd have zero trust in his current defensive coaching staff to develop anybody. Linebackers do a fantastic, I got to be fair, linebackers, they do a wonderful job. And I think that's Mike Smith's forte going back to the Ravens when he was Ray Lewis's coach. But everything else,
There's mourning going on in Pittsburgh right now. So they can't believe it.
They can't believe it, but I mean, look.
Mourning. How about New Orleans? People are jumping into Mississippi River this morning.
We talked a little bit about my obsession with the Jaguars and that bandwagon, but I think the Jaguars thing speaks to the whole reality that the NFL fans and even analysts, a lot of misperceptions out there. You know, we try to put teams in boxes and players and think this is who this guy is, and then we just stick with it. Like Bortles, right? Bortles threw for the 11th most yards in the league this year. Blake Bortles. Mm-hmm. So this
but,
is
but no, they were 3-13 last year, and they killed Bortles.
He had a bad year last year. But 2 years ago, he lit it up with 37 touchdowns, I think, fantasy football darling, and was lighting it up. So there's no surprise that this guy lit it up like that. But if you listen to the national media, oh, he's terrible. He throws for 10 yards a game. He's 11th leading passer, threw more than Jameis and a lot of other guys this year.
But they have defense and a running back. Steve.
Right.
They do.
So he gets knocked down like that. The Jaguars, Ravens had the 6th-ranked defense in the NFL this year. They put up 44 on the Ravens. They put up 40-something on the Texans, who've got defensive talent. It wasn't that big a shock.
Some of that comes from their defense. Some
sure,
of it.
Yeah. Sure. And the defense made plays in this game. But it's interesting. I think it's good for the league, you know, to have some new blood in there. I really wouldn't have wanted to watch Pittsburgh and New England again, knowing what was going to happen. You know, Pittsburgh would choke, and they'd be all over Tomlin and Brady and all that. Hopefully somebody on Jacksonville buries Tom Brady and we get a wild Super Bowl with the Jaguars. And
you know, one thing I noticed yesterday, I'm sure you guys did too, monitoring Twitter, and you see it all the time. You saw it at halftime of the Chiefs-Titans game. You saw it at halftime of the Jags game. You probably saw it at halftime of the Vikings-Saints game. People are so quick to go to Twitter and say, you know, this game's over, and they're looking to the next matchup of the championship game.
I did that yesterday with the Jags.
Steve, let me say this. The Steelers, especially this year, I noticed, they fall behind and they make a rally. That's what the Steelers do. Yep. They never stay down. They don't stay down. Who didn't think the Saints had a little something left in them at halftime? You know, this is Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm.
This is one hell of an offense, which it is every year since Drew Brees got together with Sean Payton in the Big Easy. Every year. They average 28 points a game, and they finish, you know, number one or number two in total offense. That's what they do. And as good as the Viking defense is, you know, they were no match for Brees in the second half. Xavier Rhodes is fantastic. Everson Griffin's a hell of a player. Harrison Smith. But you know what? Drew Brees finds guys, whether it's Ginn, you know.
What a pickup he's been for the Saints.
You know, Kamara's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. You know, a guy like that, if the Bucs could get anybody even half that good in the second or third round, it would make a huge difference for the Bucs in 2018. I usually don't feel bad for the losers, but I felt bad for Drew Brees on Sunday.
I got to bring this up while I'm thinking about it. And we'll play it for you later, Ira, because it's not safe for work, and I don't think our good sponsors would appreciate this. But in a recent Justin Pawlowski Bucs Uncensored podcast, the great Lou from Newport Richie made an appearance. It was the best rant I've ever heard. He just went bananas on the Bucs and how they couldn't find a running back last year. And I'm significantly cleaning it up.
Was he reading it from a prepared text?
No, I think it came from the heart. He was going bananas. It
was it
beautiful.
Better than Oprah Winfrey's speech at the Golden Globes over there, really?
No, you would pay to hear this. Pay to hear Oprah. I'm cleaning this up, but one of the best phrases was that Snoop Dogg McPlaybook, you know, he couldn't read the playbook, that they had to teach him how to read the playbook with joints, and he still couldn't figure it out.
I might have to go back and listen to that.
Oh, we'll play for it. It is beautiful, man. It was in a fetal position laughing.
What's your takeaway from Saints-Vikings?
Saints-Vikings, well, man, you think in a normal situation, a guy screws up that badly, he's hated in town, fans can't believe it. He's going to have a new team next year. But this guy's a rookie. He'll be back. He's got to face that music. And that's just a tough spot for the kid. But what a brutal football play. I mean, so many high school kids wouldn't even just tackle the guy.
Let him catch the ball.
And you know the instructions from his coaches going into that play is you're the safety. You're the last line. Nobody gets behind you. Keep everything in front of you. Make the tackle. Keep him in bounds.
Keep him in bounds.
Slap him on the ass. But he misses the guy completely. He can't even touch him. You get a 6-year-old to touch him.
The first thing I thought of when I saw that play, the thing with Williams, first thing that crossed my mind was these guys today, Lovie Smith mentality, blow up the ball carrier so you can get a turnover. Don't worry about tackling. Blow the guy up. And that's exactly what happened. It looked like he was trying to blow him up. He whiffed, and because of terrible tackling fundamentals.
Boy, tackling in this league stinks.
They're not taught to tackle anymore.
Wait till Gruden finds that out in Oakland this fall.
That doesn't mean you can't teach tackling. You use a tackling dummy to tackle. I mean, I love Pat Kermit to death, but he's always harping on the CBA has ruined football. He calls it the new CBA. Last time I checked, it's 2018. The new CBA, quote-unquote, was ratified in 2011. It's not new anymore. Everybody plays on the same thing. You know, he tried to say it's ruining Jameis. Give me a break. Nonsense. These guys, and it was personified with Lovie Smith, are taught to blow up ball carriers for turnovers and takeaways. They're not taught to tackle. If you could teach a guy rotten fundamentals to blow a guy up, you can sure as hell to teach him good fundamentals. And you can teach a tackling dummy, you can teach a guy to tackle. It's not that difficult. It's not that difficult. He whiffed, touchdown. If he had proper fundamentals, the guy would have been tackled.
He also might have had pass interference on his mind. And if
shame on the NFL.
Shame on the NFL that a player's thinking about
Well, it's still
but
on
it's
the...
so prevalent, and it's such a killer penalty that it goes through these guys' minds.
Come on, don't interfere. Yeah, that's the rule. I can't blame the NFL. Even 30
well,
years
it goes
ago.
Back, it goes back to my take five shots downfield a game.
It Mr. does.
You're not,
it
you're
does.
Not wrong, Ira, but Isbitz is right. Just, you know, give him a cushion. You know, it's like it was so obvious.
30 years,
to tackle.
30 years ago, you were still not allowed to hit the guy before he got the ball. Now, it wasn't called like it is today, but still.
You could smack him around past the five-yard radius.
You couldn't blow him up with your head down. You know.
quickly, Steve.
All right, real quick in that game, a guy who always gets overlooked is Michael Thomas on the Saints.
Very
he
good.
Has the NFL record for most catches in the first 2 years of a career.
Wow. Yeah.
And he's been dominant in the playoffs, and he's got that record. Nobody ever talks about
him. He's very good, but Breeze makes him even better.
Right, Breeze makes him even better. So here we go, Ira. Before we get to the other games, and Lee, we've got now Case Keenum in the NFC Championship game. We've got Blake Bortles in the championship game. And we on the other
and
side.
Nick Foles.
And we've got Nick Foles. You know the NFL is a trend league. Owners, GMs are always looking at trends. Could it be that a trend in this league becomes a little, not a lot, I'm just saying a little bit of devaluing of the quarterback position?
Well, you could have made the same argument maybe after the 2002 Bucks won the Super Bowl. With that dominating defense and a decent quarterback in Brad Johnson.
Yeah, decent.
Who I think may be equivalent to the way Case Keenum played this year. Case Keenum had a heck of a season.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's not knock Case Keenum. But you're right.
He's
I mean, Nick Foles and Blake Bortles. I mean, let's be honest. Those teams have pretty dominant defenses. The Eagles have a very good one, as Atlanta just found out, you know, especially at home. And Case Keenum's about to find that out next Sunday. We know about Minnesota's defense, arguably better than Jacksonville's. And if they don't have the best defense, then the Jags do. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're 1-2 or 2-1, whatever way you want to flip it. It's a fair point, Steve, but you better have an overwhelming defense, not just a decent defense if you're going to try to win with an average quarterback.
I got a question for you, Ira, and I know Bucks fans want to hear this. It's the Vikings question, but it's related to the Bucks. How true was it that Mike Zimmer wanted to come to the Bucks, and the Glazers already were infatuated with bringing Lovie back?
I think there is some truth to that. Look, I think they took a run at Gruden.
The sirens. That's why Zimmer.
You
over,
mention Lovie Smith and you get sirens. I think Steve, it's out there that the Glazers might have taken a run at Gruden after the Shiano fiasco.
Those sirens you hear are from Illinois fans about Lovie. Season tickets.
Now,
for
by
Lovie.
The way, you mentioned Lovie Smith, and this.
I'm
drew,
sorry.
This drew the
just,
ire.
Just to clarify, they're going for T.J. Ward. That's what that is. Go ahead.
Oh, that's a cheap shot, even for you, Isbitz. And this is another reference to Mad Dog Russo, because last week I told him who I picked for my postseason awards, and I picked Gurley over Brady. Thought I was crazy. And I told him I didn't take Sean McVay, but I picked Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer's done a fantastic
he
job.
He has.
He has.
Yeah, he lost three quarterbacks.
And he goes, Mike Zimmer, are you crazy? It's got to be Sean McVay. And I said, Mike Zimmer's on quarterback number three, and he lost Dalvin Cook in week four. Dalvin Cook was going to have a hell of a season.
Mm-hmm.
He was on he's going to gain 1,200 yards, Dalvin Cook. And so now he's got, Latavius Murray? Yeah, he was decent.
Hey, you lose your starting quarterback and your number one running back and win the division. That doesn't happen every year.
First two quarterbacks. Yeah, you're on quarterback number three, and you lost your.
They won 13 games, Steve. They won 13 games.
Mike Zimmer's done a hell of a job.
And,
they could have had him over Lovie, but
just to give our listeners a preview, I believe I'm going with the Vikings next Sunday. We'll see what you boys come up with, but whatever I come up with, you guys have got to pick the opposite because you got to pick up ground on me in this.
Leaning toward Minnesota too because I'm just not sold with the almost Bucks back.
That's a pick for another day. Steve.
I'm not trying to make up ground anymore. I realize I've lost. Now I'm trying to save face.
Let me comment quickly on Saturday games. Quickly.
Yeah, please. Take your time, Ira.
The Patriots game, a terrible game. Horrible matchup going in. You knew Tennessee had no chance.
I didn't even watch.
And I got to be objective. As an old Chiefs fan, I'm still mad about the Titans loss. But
you should be.
I have no reason to think the Chiefs could have went into Foxborough and won that game.
No?
I don't.
Because no defense with the Chiefs?
Yeah, the Chiefs' defense not good enough. Brady would have carved them up.
Check this out. Ira goes to talk about Saturday's game, and he rolls into crying about the Chiefs.
Somehow I talk about Andy Reid.
The Chiefs didn't play Saturday.
Terrible matchup in Foxborough.
Yeah, I didn't even watch it.
Ridiculous.
Didn't even watch it.
Hopefully Jacksonville gives them a better game.
Wait a minute.
Terrible matchup.
Come on. You watched the game, right?
Possibly.
I didn't watch the game.
I watched the game, okay?
I was at the movies. I was watching the Post.
All right.
About journalism,
listen,
something you should be watching.
The Patriots come out, and they have – it was an interesting stat that popped up on the screen, mostly because the Bucs are so horrible at this. The Patriots lead the league in opening drive scoring. Lead the league.
Touchdowns or scoring?
Scoring. 3.5 points per opening drive is their average.
Pretty good.
Now, they were 3 and out. Titans come in, 3 and out.
Okay.
And then the Titans come and rip off an 80-yard drive, or 87-yard drive, to score. They're up 7-0. They look good. It was a ball game. Now, it fell apart on the Titans, but that was a ball game. It wasn't like it was a blowout from the start. It was a ball game.
7-0 lead doesn't mean it's a ball game. I mean, they had no chance to win, and when the game was over, they looked like they had no chance to win.
And you're watching watching a preachy movie about someone doing their job.
Forget your seven. But Meryl Streep, outstanding. Outstanding, Meryl. Outstanding.
All right, enough.
Meryl for president.
All right, we won't talk about that.
How come they don't make movies about plumbers who do their jobs?
Eagles, Falcons, gentlemen.
Speaking of Lou and Newport Richie.
Everybody was betting the Falcons. You know that, Steve. Everybody was jumping on the Falcons. Nick Foles ain't going to beat the Falcons.
Yep. Defense.
My line was Philly is more than Carson Wentz, although he's a big part of it. And by the way, I've never seen a line move so much about one guy getting hurt. Carson Wentz, I think Philly would have been a 4 or 5 point favorite in that game, if not more. And instead, they're what, 4 point underdog?
I think it was
six
point
crying shame.
Yeah, crying.
And I didn't include this in my story that I wrote last week. Carson Wentz, Kerwin said, well, Jameis needed more work, and the CBA prevented him from having work.
Tell that to Jared Goff.
Well, I got a better one for you. Tell that to Carson Wentz. He came from 1AA. Jameis won a freaking national championship.
Tell it to Deshaun Watson. I mean, come on. These arguments are silly.
It's stupid, and especially when you go back to 2011 when the CBA came after the lockout. And in comes Cam Newton, lighting it up, setting rookie records. And Andy Dalton goes 9-7 and has a great year, goes to the Pro Bowl. And these are guys off.
What did I say all of last summer once Kyle Shanahan went over to the 49ers? I said, they're going to miss this guy. The Falcons are going to miss this guy. They had a fantastic, fantastic offense in 2016. In 2017, they had a okay offense, a decent offense. I knew Matt Ryan was going to take a plunge because Shanahan's that good of an offensive play.
Now, that was a game Saturday.
And Sarkisian is now under scrutiny.
Yes.
People are saying, he's not very good, and he had no experience as an NFL offensive coordinator.
Correct.
Zero. And we'll see if he comes back. Matt Ryan's still a quality quarterback, though. No,
that was a game Saturday. Philly and Atlanta.
That was a very, very tough
game. And it was typical Atlanta. Typical Atlanta. They got a chance to close the deal? Nope.
And Steve loves the idea of Arthur Blank stewing on the sidelines. Irv.
If Julio Jones squeezes that football, Sarkisian's a genius, everything, but he's happy. I mean, he had a clear shot at it. It was right there. Would he have gotten his feet in? Maybe, but he's a master at that. I don't know.
Back to you, what you said earlier about Antonio Brown. I thought you were overreaching. Antonio Brown comes down with that pass.
Antonio Brown's better than Julio Jones.
Yeah.
He's better.
Antonio Brown, if you look at his numbers, he's really, if he quits today, he's probably a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
He might be the best player in the league. I mean, it's tough to argue.
Had he not got hurt? I mean, I heard some talk.
I think I would have voted for him for MVP.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. Would he have been in the running for MVP?
I think I would have voted for him. Mm-hmm. And Russo would have laughed at me. And by the way, Carson Wentz might have won it if he didn't get hurt.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You had a great spot with Russo. I like Don Coryell. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but you had a great defense of Coryell. Russo was like screaming about it. You would even think about putting Coryell in the Hall of Fame, but you had a really good defense for him and Sid Gilman.
Well, Coryell's in the wrong category. He should be in a contributor category, okay. And he breathes in. And by the way, Isbits, if you would listen to my spot with Russo, you would have driven off the road because he mentioned Marv Levy. And when he mentioned Marv Levy, I immediately said to Russo, Chris, I want to thank you. I just won $50. I bet my neighbor down the street that you would bring up Marv Levy's name on this spot. And I'm playing with house money, and the Kemper loved that.
That was great. House that was money, hilarious. Baby.
All right, Little Business Ira, Wednesdays, 5 p.m., SiriusXM, Mad Dog Radio. That's when you can be heard with Chris Russo, so tune in to that.
I'm only on a few more times. The final one will be live in Minneapolis, face-to-face.
That's Russo's problem.
Russo's problem.
He wants to ruin his show by not having you on year-round. That's his problem.
What's the matter? I can't weigh in on free agency and whatever?
Can they bring you in on baseball? Can he put you on that baseball show of his, that TV show?
I hate.
You know what I'm going to do, Ira? I'm going to call in.
It should be called High Bagel. I'm right there.
I'm gonna try to call in Wednesdays at 5, and after you're finished, and I'm gonna try to get on the air. I'll come up with some topic that they're talking about.
I'm gonna recognize your voices, but
I'll sound like a good caller, and then I'll just rip into Russo.
You're Joe from Philadelphia or something?
I'll rip into Russo and say you're ruining your show by not having Ira on year round. This is a travesty. You're out of your mind, Russo. You know,
and that will be followed by the Kemper call within 6 minutes.
Also, Ira, you're on Mondays and Fridays, 10:30 p.m. Spectrum Sports 360 for those who have Spectrum.
With my former colleague, Mr. Roy Cummings.
With Roy Cummings doing your arguing thing.
And my tailgate Sunday's been curtailed till next season.
Yeah, what is Fox 13 doing? Speaking of championship week, we have our championship sponsor, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Check them out, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. And, of course, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, edmorsecadillactampa.com. And, all right, Ira, just to clarify, as we wrap up the playoffs, because you do this a lot in the podcast, because, as you know, I go back, I listen to the podcast, I edit out all the curse words that you spew kind of nonstop. Oftentimes, I ask you a question, then you comment as if it's my own point. I'm just asking you the question, right? So I'm not suggesting quarterbacks are being devalued. You say, yeah, that's not my point. I'm just asking. And on that note, I'll ask you the other flip side is, and Lee wrote about this a little bit on Joe Bucks Fan, defense, right? Now we've got people, maybe the NFL goes back to a mindset of, well, defense wins championships. You can get, look at all you can accomplish with a great defense that sort of slipped away a little bit. Do you think that becomes more of a trend where teams are thinking, we can play defense in this era, whereas guys like Warren Sapp and others bellowed for a long time, defense is dead. You can't play in this era defense because you can't hit. Have things changed there?
That theory, Lee, should never go away. If you got a hell of a defense, you're going to go far in this league. I looked it up, Steve. I believe the Patriots, the Eagles, the Vikings, and the Jags all finished in the top five in scoring defense. Four out of five. Out of the top five, those are four of them right there. That's not a coincidence. Steve, now look, it's very tough to play defense in this league. That's why you got to give it up for teams like the Vikings and Jags. The rules continue to be designed to score points. I mean, Rich McKay admits it, head of the compensation committee. He's not going to argue that point. We want points as a league. And as a result, they keep putting these rules on. It's making tougher, especially pass defense. Pass defense is a lost art. How many times do you see guys, the defender never turns around, Lee.
He never turns around.
Yeah. It happens all the time.
All the time.
And that's why I think teams should start playing more zone defense, because at least you're facing the quarterback. You're playing man-to-man. It's almost impossible.
Almost impossible.
How many times did you see Diggs going across the field on one of those shallow slants and the guy's trying to follow him as a man-to-man? You get lost.
Keywords, trying.
Trying.
Yeah.
You get lost in the wash, Lee. Look. It's not a coincidence, Lee, that these are very good defensive teams. And here's the irony. After September was finished and New England was maybe 2-2 after beating the Bucks, I think, their defensive stats were horrible. Absolutely horrible. And people were screaming at Matt Patricia, who, by the way, is probably going to get a head coaching job.
Mm-hmm.
And what did the three of us say? Belichick will find a way to turn this thing around.
He did.
And he did. Mm-hmm. And he did. And I'll tell you this. They don't have exceptional personnel. They do not.
He squeezes every drip from those lemons.
You know,
he really does. Belichick does. He really does. He's fantastic.
Guys, I know this sounds crazy. On a personnel standpoint, The Bucs might be better than the Patriots if you take the quarterback out of the equation.
Come on, Ira.
They might be better than the Patriots.
Ira's not crazy.
I'm not crazy.
You're crazy.
They got Trey Flowers. Trey Flowers. Well, who's this guy? Simeon Rice?
Do they have anybody on the defensive line as good as McCoy? No, they do not.
I mean, it's linebackers. Not crazy. It's not crazy.
Malcolm Butler. Steve's not crazy. What's wrong with Trey Flowers?
He's okay.
Well, we don't even have a defensive end who's close to okay. You know how the Bucs got Trey Flowers? I don't know if you've been reading all your Joe Bucs fan this weekend.
Yeah, I've been reading it.
All right. So they got Trey Flowers with the fourth round pick that traded away.
Patriots, it's scheme.
It's scheme plus Belichick. He puts a guy on the field. He knows what he can do. More importantly, he knows what he can't do. He doesn't put him in a position to fail.
You think I'm crazy, Isbitz? I love it.
Of course I do. Of course I do.
Now, look, just to say that they got Brady and the Bucs don't, I mean, that's not a trifle. They got Brady. Who I think is the greatest quarterback of all time. I can't. And the Bucs don't.
He's top five, but I can't. You know, anyway, here's.
He's the great equalizer.
The people that are going to overreact and say you can win championships with defense, you don't need a quarterback anymore. And I've seen people talking about it this morning. I suggest you look at this weekend's games. You talked about, you know, people on Twitter, games over with. 10 years ago, 21-point lead in a playoff game, it's over. Roethlisberger brings him back. Matt Ryan, if Julio Jones squeezes the ball, Matt Ryan brings Atlanta back. You need a quarterback.
And if the crazy Viking game doesn't end like that, Drew Brees is in the division.
Thank you.
Is in the championship.
Thank
game.
You. When you need to march 80, 90 yards, whatever, late in the game, if you don't have a quarterback, you're SOL, look at Jameis against the Saints. Brought him back 95 yards, no time. You don't have a quarterback, you're not going to. Did that ever happen with Trent Dilfer? I can think of it only once against Miami. That great Bucs defense, but I remember, I don't know how many games up in Green Bay, they needed to drive the length of the field in the late in the game to get a score, either take the lead or come back and tie it. Forget it. Couldn't do it.
All right, Ira.
Is there any question that the accent a year after saying, well, we need more explosive plays and we need more yards after catch. Is there any question that this year it's all about the trenches, especially on defense?
Defensive end and corner.
Is there any question?
Is this like some sort of rhetorical Buccaneers at One Buck Palace question? Because if you're asking, did Jason Light and Dirk Cutter believe that, who the hell knows after what they did last year, ignoring certain needs and a running back and other stuff? So who knows what's really going on?
I don't want to hear about Noah Spence, and Lee DeKemper doesn't want to hear about Noah Spence unless you're talking about him as your fourth defensive end.
I love Noah Spence, but unfortunately the poor guy, he can't stay healthy. Therefore, you can't bank on him. I hope the guy turns into the next Simeon Rice, and I love the guy. I don't know if I told you this before, Ira, and this is shedding some light on what happens in the locker room. I was up at Minnesota game, and boy, in retrospect, I wrote it at the time, and in retrospect, it's even more glaring, how they physically were pummeled by Minnesota. Physically. I remember them carrying Lavonnie David into the locker room.
You know how many quality defensive linemen the Eagles have? 7. Maybe 8. I'm not kidding.
Chris Long was up.
They play 5 snaps. They get off the field. The next group comes in. That's what they do. They rotate.
Chris Long was out there for the taking, but not good enough for the Bucs.
They keep taking defensive linemen.
Ira, the Bengals did that for years, just rotating guys in and out. Solid guys.
You keep drafting defensive linemen.
Yeah, I was in a locker room. I can't remember who I was talking to. We mentioned Noah Spence. And I remember walking through the locker room, and Noah Spence got hurt that game. Noah Spence is from his locker, and he sees it was Lee, the first play of the freaking game. He kept saying it, Lee, the first play of the game. And he was fighting.
First of all, I'm stunned that he knew who you were, DeKemper. That's number
and,
one.
And he almost, I swear to you, he almost started crying. He was so upset. And I didn't know what to say to the guy. You could tell he was upset. He wanted to talk about it. And I didn't even record. I didn't have my recorder on. He called me over, Lee. And I literally felt like I was a priest in a confessional. He just went on for like 5 minutes, 6 minutes, how he worked so hard in the offseason. He had all these moves he was ready to unleash against the Vikings. Never had a chance because he couldn't move his shoulder. I've never felt so bad about a player
before.
These
teams keep stockpiling defensive linemen. They take them every year in the first 3 or 4 rounds. No matter what they got, they take another one.
That reminds me of what Dungy used to do with cornerbacks.
Belichick also has a long history of drafting offensive linemen late in the first round. Trading down, getting one early in the second.
And then they develop.
All right, let's pivot to the man. This is his season.
Pivot.
It's Jason Light's season. Ira, it's Jason Light time of year. Here we are in mid-January.
Then I do my Monday column address to Mr. Light. I believe you did.
You did your Monday column address to Mr. Light. I'm going to ask you about that, where you basically said, you floated the notion, look, Light, here's my advice, and you better wise up. Draft to win your division. That was the theme of it.
Absolutely.
Draft to win your division. But before you dive into that, I want to throw some names at you. And let me know what you think about how this might go into Mr. Light's mindset. You look at the Jacksonville defense. You got five big money free agents there. Five. A.J. Boye, Malik Jackson, Calais Campbell. We're talking massive dollars.
Boy, they hit on these guys.
Barry Church, safety from Dallas, is back there starting. Paul Posluszny, who was signed a little bit earlier.
He's being phased out a little bit. You know,
a little bit. Free agent starter, core of the defense, heart and soul guy. Five free agents, big, big bucks there. Is Jason Light going to look at his wallet and say, you know, from Team Glazer and say, you know, maybe I just need to pick the right guys?
Well, I don't think he can be scared of spending money in free agency, even though he's got a very checkered, to be kind, resume in that regard. The Bucks have plenty of money to spend. You can't bank on rookies making an impact necessarily. You know what Light's mindset is? I got to turn this around in 1 year. That's his mindset. I got one more year on my contract. What else is he supposed to think? And if you're Dirk Cutter, can you be thinking beyond 2018? Certainly not. Coming off a 5-11,
you can't be.
Not with the
Glazers having an itchy trigger finger like they do.
It's not how much money you spend in free agency. It's how you spend it, Steve. And they got to stop striking out. They got to do a better job of focusing in on these guys on the field and off the field. And I mentioned in my column last week that they messed with the chemistry in the room.
They did.
And not in a good way. Not in a good way. Calais Campbell, and it's one of the points that the three of us made, you know, last January, last February, in talking up Calais Campbell, we did our research.
Sure.
We did our research, and we don't even know Steve Keim. We don't even know Steve Keim, but we did our research.
I've had beers with him.
And we realized Campbell's a tremendous leader. Campbell's a tremendous locker room guy, besides being a hell of a player. And I just think Lee, the success of the Jags with Campbell and how he's made everybody around him better, it makes a bad situation look even worse for a Buck fan. They're still pining for Calais Campbell.
I guess I could say this. I guess it's not untoward
and
anymore.
We'll never know why exactly it didn't happen. Who didn't want to spend the money? We're probably never going to get to the point.
Someone eventually will talk, maybe years down the road, but someone will talk. I don't think what I'm going to say is untoward. Generally, when I meet people off the record, away from a football facility, I don't like to talk about it because there's no reasonable expectation of them being quoted or anything, but I think this is okay. I walked last year at the Combine, walking to St. Elmo's, there's Arians and Keim. Keim recognized me. Hey, come on over, you know, okay. I talked a little bit with Keim. I had a real long chat with Arians, but it was great.
That's the second guy that recognized the Kemper in this podcast, Steve. That's a record.
So anyway,
Wait till we talk about your breakfast last week.
Keim's was loosened up. I don't know how long he was there, but he was loosened up. And I felt like being a smart aleck. And I know him and Jason Light are very tight. And so
this is before free agency.
I was at the Combine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in Indianapolis, St. Elmo's, with the Hooters calendar girls wearing red cocktail dresses. Nice, man. Anyway, I went to Keim. I felt like being a smart aleck. So I bluntly, right to his face, media away, I looked him right in the eyes. I said, so is Jason Light going to get Kasen Campbell? And Keim freaked out. He's like, I don't know. He like someone cattle
prod him. Say that again.
I don't know.
What'd you ask him?
Is Jason Light going to get Calais Campbell?
Oh, is
he? And he freaked out. He's like, I don't know. like someone told him he just had his wallet stolen.
Well, the answer is he didn't get him. He didn't get him. By the way, to answer your question specifically, this is not a great crop of potential free agent defensive line.
No.
It's not. Lawrence of Dallas, he's not going to be available. The Cowboys are crazy if they make him available.
Nor is Ziggy Ansah.
Ziggy Ansah is probably the best guy after Lawrence.
He ain't going to be available.
He's probably not going to be available. So, Steve, you might have to reach, and I'm not big on reaching.
You don't have a choice.
All right, Sage, look. You said, do you really believe? Because I don't know if I really believe that you draft to win your division. Because then, if you're drafting to win your division, then you're constantly reacting to what everybody else has. Do you think the Saints draft to win their division? Do Carolina, have they been drafting to win the division, or are they just trying to be the best team they can be and do what they do well? That's a philosophical question there.
Steve, that's the way to the playoffs. You don't depend on anybody else. You don't worry about where the 10 wins is going to get you in a playoff. If you win your division, you're in, and you're also assured of a home game in the playoffs. So that's the importance of winning the division. Now, you're saying, how do you draft to win your division? Well, you look around it, and you see if there's a common characteristic. And how many years has the three of us been looking at each other and saying, NFC South, quarterbacks. NFC South, quarterbacks. That's what jumps out at you. You don't say Christian McCaffrey and Devontae Freeman. You say quarterbacks. And when you say quarterbacks, you don't answer with, you know, linebacker. You answer with, put that guy on the ground or harass him. Now, look, sacks might be overrated, but pressure's not. It's all about pressure. Sacks are great. Sacks are drive killers, or should be. But pressure. The Bucs don't have any pressure, Steve. It's not just finishing last in the league in sacks. They don't hound the guy enough. They don't get enough hits on the guy.
I got you. All right, so Lee, chime in on this with Ira. Now, philosophically speaking, then, we all know the Bucs' pass rush is brutal, okay, terrible. So we know Mike Smith is still going to be a guy who likes to blitz, even though they didn't get home last year with the blitzes at all.
Stop right there. When you blitz because you have to, which the Bucs do,
sure,
and you don't get there, that's how you're last in the league in yards given up. But that's exactly how it is.
If you have a good four-man pass rush, you're still going to blitz anyway. Mike
Smith
will.
Yeah.
But then you're going to get there. Then you're going to get there with a good four-man rush. Because
well,
the first
hopefully.
Not expecting it.
Hopefully. Yeah. All right, but it's different. I get you.
It's
but
different.
Right now, so we all agree that the Bucs' pass rush is brutal.
Well, who's going to argue?
Okay, so then does the goal become not swinging for a home run just to get this defense, this pass rush, close to average?
Which I think it was in 2016.
Right, it was.
Close to average.
So is that the goal for Jason Light? Instead of trying to swing a big miracle stick here, do I just try to get each position better except for McCoy and get this thing close to average?
I looked at the sacks. And, you know, teams like Jacksonville way at the top. Pittsburgh, I think, led. Jacksonville had one less. But teams like New England and even Minnesota with Griffin, as good as Griffin is, Minnesota, I think, had 35 sacks, which is about what the Bucs had in 2016, mid-30s, something like that.
Bucs were ninth in the league in sacks.
And
most
and
of
won, and won nine games. You know, not a great coincidence either. There's a relationship there. And also, beyond the sacks, they did a better job of pressuring quarterbacks just overall in 2016. They did a lot better. And as a result, what keyed that five-game winning streak? Defense.
Mm-hmm.
Defense. Mike Smith's defense.
Yeah, and the more you look at it, the more it sounds like a fluke.
So I think you're right, Steve. You don't have to have...
See, wait a minute. I didn't say do that.
Oh, you didn't
Here
say
we
that.
Go back to that.
Well,
that's not my point. I'm just asking you, is that what you do?
Middle of the pack would be very nice for Buck fans right now.
You know,
they'd be very happy with that.
How standards have lowered.
They'd be very happy with that.
You really
35 instead of 22 makes a difference.
See, but I think Lee and I know that they would not be happy with that. If the Bucs go sign they draft, let's say they draft defensive end in the second and the third round, and then they sign a couple of decent rotational guys, maybe they make a play on somebody's restricted free agent or something.
And if they get 15 more sacks, Buck fans will be happy.
Yeah, but they'll be miserable until the season starts.
Oh. Well, that pales in comparison to how they feel in December, you know, when we see what's going on.
Yeah.
My answer is, you know, what's the result of all that? And if the answer is
sure.
They get 37 sacks, Buck fans will be happy.
What was the date of Lou's rant? Was that Friday?
Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Lou's got getting a lot of time
well,
on this podcast.
If deservedly so, this rant is... Lou represents 80% of the Bucs fans and their mentality right now. We'll play that rant for you later, Ira. You got to hear this. And he encompasses how
all right,
depressed
on
and hacked
Thursday's
up.
Rant, on Thursday's podcast, I'm going to do a rant. I'm going to plan it, and I'm going to do it. Well, I don't know what it's about. It might be about fire engines and Lovie Smith, but I'm going to do one.
It might be.
All right, Ira. The one thing I will say... is I just don't think philosophically Jason Light can sit down and say, how do I draft to compete in the division? You gotta.
What are you, Immanuel Kant? This is not about philosophy.
It is about philosophy. That's the problem with the Bucs. I mean, look.
You couldn't go with Descartes?
I couldn't go with Descartes. Or, unbelievable.
What, like, what was life? What is life?
Draft exists, therefore I have a job.
I got the Kemper going now.
That was funny. It was funny.
I'm talking about results. You want to talk about philosophy?
Well, but that's our problem, right?
Jean-Paul Sartre or something? Well,
St. Thomas Aquinas.
But seriously, isn't that the problem? Jason Light gets here in 2014. Now, can anybody figure out what his philosophy has been on the offensive line? What's the philosophy? We'll get rid of this guy. He's good. So we can draft this guy. Let's get Jamon Meredith and O'Neal Cousins in there.
Jamon Meredith in
2015, his philosophy was simple. We got to protect Jameis, so I'm drafting two offensive linemen. In the same draft, I'm getting Jameis Winston.
I'm going back to the philosophical thing. They already had guys who could protect Winston in Donald Penn, in Jeremy Zutaw.
Well, that was Lovie.
They had guys. Well, you tell me Light didn't evaluate the offensive linemen?
Well, I always remember Lovie saying how that damn basement of his in Chicago up in he told me the suburb. But anyway, he's sitting in that dang basement reviewing all these players.
They wanted a young corner.
He had control.
But I also remember Light sitting there telling all of us, saying that, oh, yeah, when we're reviewing offensive line film, Lovie Smith, he doesn't even sit up in his chair, and joked about how Lovie doesn't care. I don't know.
Well, Lovie also evaluated McCown.
Well, all right. Well, then let's still there. It's hard to figure out what the plan is. Sweezy, let's wait for this guy with the broken back for a year. I mean, that's a plan. I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting.
I mean, I gotta be fair. I cannot imagine Jason Light signed a guy knowing he had to have back surgery. I just can't fathom that.
Guys, the philosophy, Steve. Now, come on. This is.
But
not
you didn't have to
secret.
Wait for him to come back.
See, what were you talking about? You should have cut him after.
You didn't have to reinvest for a second year of the guy.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I thought he was loosening up some salary cap money.
Steve,
there,
I'm not giving you any secrets here. You know I'm right about this. The draft philosophy since Winston came aboard 2015 is help for Winston.
Yeah.
Help on the offensive line, help at wide receiver in free agency and the draft. And that's what it's been about. And there's going to be a sharp contrast in 2018. Does that mean there's no chance they would draft Saquon Barkley? I can't say that.
I can't say that either.
I can't say that. But the accent in free agency and the draft overall, it's got to be on defense.
Well,
it's got to be.
If the Colts pass on Barkley and Barkley's there, even though you need a defensive end so bad, Barkley's immediate upgrade. Immediate. Defensive end isn't. And again,
the problem is the Jags added Fournette, but they had tremendous defensive pieces in place.
Sure.
And the Bucs could add Barkley and the defense could be the same.
Is that another reason to get Barkley? Because you keep the ball out of the other team's hand, hands.
I'm not saying it would be a horrible move, but they have to address defense in a predominant way this offseason.
And I don't disagree, but recent history, last 20 years or so, a rookie defensive end getting double-digit sacks, rare. I mean, very rare.
But he could help.
It would be a difference maker that Barkley could be.
Well,
I mean, Barkley could be a home run hitter right away.
It's interesting, especially as you sit here and you boldly told America and the international audience that Jason Light, he's got to be playing here right now for his job in quick impact. He can't be worried about long term.
Yeah,
that's a dangerous way to have a general manager.
And that's reality.
And
that's what I was getting at Ira as well. I'm not saying you shouldn't draft a defensive end, but, you know, Light's got one more year in his contract as we speak. Cutter, he ain't coming back unless he gets 500. Yes, the argument, go get young players, develop them. I don't disagree. But you know what? Cutter's not in that position. I don't think he wants to be watching on TV the Bucs develop a defensive end 3 years from now.
First of all, Buck fans don't care about this team being good in 2021. They care about 2018, as they should. I mean, 10 years without a playoff game? They're worried about 2021? Come on, are you kidding me?
No, I agree with you. It's a pickle because, again, it goes back to philosophy. If you have a philosophy of building if you want to be a team builder or you want to be a hole plugger, that you got to decide how you want to manage the operation.
Somebody just was a team builder with the Los Angeles Rams, and the next thing I know, they're in the playoffs and they're leading the league in scoring with Jared Goff.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it can be done.
Yes, it can be done.
Mm-hmm. And which reminds me of the fun element before we get ready to wrap up here. The fun element, of course, you know, Mark Barron's a big piece of the Rams puzzle. And he was drafted specifically by Mark Domenech to cover the tight ends in the division.
There comes another fire engine. You just mentioned Domenech. There comes a fire engine.
So he was drafted. This guy was drafted to lock down the Jimmy Grahams and the Tony Gonzalez, all these guys who didn't even stay in the division very long. So it's like, I think you just got to do your own thing, what you do well. I don't know. So
what you're saying is, I think I know what you're saying. That's a reactionary move.
It seemed like it. Yeah. A safety at number 7? Did you need a safety? You know, there's a lot of ways to look at a
reactionary lot of stuff. Meaning you drafted the guy to stop the tight ends, the tight ends are all gone.
Right. I mean, it's like saying, oh, we got to worry about signing these guys. They may not even be healthy in 2 years. You can't be worried about re-signing players and, oh, we got to save money because they may not even exist. It's interesting, Sage. All right, couple of nuggets, Ira. Let's see. We'll go about 6 more minutes, 8 more minutes on the podcast, Ira. I know you're looking tired. You look like you need nourishment. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, nobody has more energy than the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports. So maybe
I'm going up to my doctor after this. I'm going to make sure. I'm going to see if my blood results came back, and I'm hoping I tested positive for a pass rusher.
I thought you were going to pick up blue pills.
Never mind the blue pills. You mean no, Dr. Vinny Boombots. That was Rodney Dangerfield's.
Yeah. There's another one I can't remember. Dr. Bougeot, Jim Rome had one. Your doctor is charging you to come in and just say, hey, here's
I didn't say he was charging me. I'm going up to see if he got the blood results and see if it tested positive for DeMarcus Lawrence. Yeah, you know.
Here's my technology. I've got a certain app that my doctor also has.
How many apps you got on there, DeKemper?
Too many.
Your battery must drain after about 12 minutes.
Dang right, almost. But at any rate.
Speaking of the blue pill.
My doctor has a certain app that. When the test results
Lee, are you listening to this?
What he said.
You're going to get me banned from a Google Play over here, Steven.
When the test results come in, I get a notification on my app. I just sign in. There's the results.
Jeez, unbelievable. Have you calmed down over there, Rusty?
I'm very calm. I thought that was funny. You too, obviously.
What do you got?
Boudreaux. Dr. Boudreaux. Jim Rome. Dr. Boudreaux.
There you go.
All right, Sage.
You want to talk about my visitor at breakfast?
Let's first touch on the fact that I posted your last podcast on Thursday. One of the things we touched on was the All-Pro voting process and centering around Andrew Norwell, the All-Pro guard, left guard, who was named All-Pro from the Panthers. And anyway, within about 3 hours of posting that podcast, which in that I asserted that the only reason he was all pro is because Pro Football Focus loves him, and your fellow writers were looking for answers at left guard and went with Pro Football Focus.
You didn't say it was the only reason, but it looked like quite a coincidence.
Yeah. And you explained that as part of your process in researching, you often go read what beat writers are writing about certain players.
I narrow my field down.
It helps you narrow the field in multiple markets. So, for example, you might go look in Philadelphia what Stefan Wisniewski's doing at left guard, or Travis
Lane
Kelce.
Lane Johnson at right tackle.
Different guys.
These are guys that sort of guy play every game, all 16 games.
So it's part of your process of your research. Well, it turns out 3 hours after your podcast, the leader of the PFF, the Pro Football Focus Tribe, retweets and takes a shot at you for, rather than studying these players and caring about Pro Football Focus, takes a shot at you and says, oh, I guess the best thing to do now is to Google left guards and read what writers are saying. I'm paraphrasing, but so I think it's pretty telling, Ira, that within 3 hours of your podcast, a national figure, international stats geek, is listening to your podcast and bashing you, and that take was 30 minutes into the podcast.
All publicity is good, Lee. I want to thank him for listening to the podcast, number one. You know, he's part of that Google Play audience, which is growing. But to a specific point, Lee, it's not so much what the writer also is saying about the guy, but in looking at stories about that player, you've got quotes from his position coach, the head coach, people that play against the guy. I try to factor it all in. Well, and if I got a quote from a guy that's playing against Lane Johnson, a coach that's preparing, and he says something about, I think this guy is the premier right tackle in football, I'm gonna count that more than I am about that website, who I'm not sure who's evaluating. And I'm going to throw this out there. In a lot of cases, Lee, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, yeah, I don't doubt that they look at tape, but what they don't know is what the player's assignment was on that particular play. You can't get around that. You cannot get around that. Do not make a call and say what the guy's, you know, for 80 snaps. What was the guy's assignment? Nobody does that.
I had an NFL scout
say. And that's a problem.
I had an NFL scout say the exact same thing. And
when Cutter and his boys look at the film on Mondays, Lee, they know what the assignments are. Yes. So then you zero in and say, you didn't do your job. You didn't execute the play. You can't do that watching a film of a game that you're not involved in.
I was talking to actually a year ago today. I was talking to an NFL scout, and we were, this very subject came up. And he said he'll be breaking down the college tape of an offensive lineman that he's interested in, the team's
interested in. Looks like they blew a block or whatever.
Thank you. Looks like he blew a block. He cuts the offensive line coach of that team on the phone. He goes, what happened here? What happened here?
That's different.
Yeah.
That's different.
Because he wants to know, like, did someone screw up something? I'll just say, I think last week, you know, it came out that these doofuses claim that O.J. Howard was worst first-round pick of the 2017 draft.
They come up with some weird stuff. Some weird stuff.
That is so ludicrous. It stands on its own. No further comment needed. But I found out 3 or 4 days prior to that. Now I am not a believer in passing ratings at all. That's hocus pocus nonsense. Go look at the all-time career passing ratings leaders, and you'll freak out. Like, no way.
You mean like a Chad Pennington could be listed or something?
He is.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah,
over Chad, Roger Staubach. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, man.
Don't insult me. 3 or 4 days before this came out, this nonsense, O.J. Howard was the worst first-round pick in the draft. Somebody for that same outfit wrote that O.J. Howard had the highest passer rating when targeted of all tight ends. Not rookies, all tight ends. So on one hand, they're saying O.J. Howard may be the most lethal weapon at tight end in the NFL. And then the right hand is saying he was the worst first-round draft pick in 2017. Make up your flipping mind.
Steve, I'm not questioning the effort of people that work for that website. And that website's popular. It is. And utilized, I think, within the league to a certain extent. I'm not questioning their effort. I think they're trying to do the best they can.
Sure.
But I think there are limitations, Steve, limitations. But I'm glad they're listening, Steve.
Absolutely. Let me say this. With the assignments, I know on many NFL teams, I had a discussion with somebody about this. Before the general manager and his goes in to evaluate tape of his own team, you know what he does? Before Jason Light reviews.
You mean on a game-by-game basis?
Yeah, on a game-by-game basis. Yeah, and yeah. I didn't talk to Jason Light specifically about this, but the GM goes to the coaching staff and the quality control people and says, I need the call sheet. So the GM watches
that's
the film.
Outstanding.
The GM
outstanding.
Goes and watches the film, knowing what the play call was, what the audible was, and that's how he evaluates based on what's
that's
going
outstanding.
On. So even the GMs won't watch
so
it.
So they blind. Go hand-in-hand.
Right.
They go hand-in-hand.
Pro Football Focus rating of Howard. Yeah, basically, for those who didn't see it, really what they did was they took the grades of all the first-round picks, and then they put them in order. But now some of those picks only played a game.
John Ross.
So a guy might have – let's say a guy might have played one good game and gotten hurt, and he had a high rating because that was just his rate.
That's nuts.
But
John Ross.
Come on.
What Lee mentioned highlights the fact that, according to the Pro Football Focus crowd, O.J. Howard can't block. That's really what it highlighted.
One of the first things Cutter talked about with him. He's a hell of a blocker.
Well, not just that. We'll see. Not just that, but they got rid of their best tight end blocker because they didn't need him anymore.
Yeah.
Stocker, so come on.
And to go to what you said about reading the quotes and things like that, I don't want anybody to think that you're just reading quotes and taking them at face value. You're using your 47 years of journalism experience reading those quotes and deciphering, okay, what is meaningful, what is not. Okay, this guy said this. Who can I believe?
Exactly.
Is that what's probably an exaggeration, what's probably not? And, you know, Lee and I do that all the time in evaluating. You
thinking.
Do this. Right. But you're bringing that to it to help decipher. And on that point on Norwell, right, he's going to be a free agent, unrestricted. The Panthers just paid Trey Turner, their Pro Bowl guard, who Gerald McCoy has said many times is one of his toughest matchups in the league. Norwell, I was reading a lot of quotes to see, where might he fit with the Bucs? What's real on this guy? And two things jump out, and I just looked at this. Greg Olsen had a quote buried somewhere that said, man, this guy Norwell, not only is he great, he's really at the center of what this offense has been about the last 3 years, in a turnaround in mentality and in physicality and whatever. And you know, quotes like that are a little more meaningful when you hear him, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not just you reading through Google looking for quotes.
Does that mean he's going to be available in free agency?
It looks like he will be. It looks like he will be, especially now that he's going to make more money as an all-pro because that will carry some weight. But I don't think Jason Light's going to buy a left guard. I don't think so.
If he grades out better than Trey Turner, why don't you keep him and dump Turner?
Because you can't pay everybody. You got Matt Khalil. You've got they paid the other Ryan Khalil. When you're a team like
Panthers are starting to get a little tight with the salary cap.
When you're the Panthers and you've won 4 out of 5 division titles or whatever it is,
and you're paying Cam a lot of money,
and you're paying everybody, you just can't do it. So they're in that boat, and they've got a lot of guys. And we could talk about some of the other pieces that might fall off that tree in future podcasts. All right, Sage, last call here is going to be your breakfast. You had an interesting breakfast. I don't know how much you want to tell. Somehow the other day you're hanging out having breakfast with Cam Newton, with Cameron Brate in New Port Richey. Port Richey, what's going on
here?
Look,
I think the most astonishing part of this story, the Kemper, which I didn't mention to you guys, this part, I picked up the check. Gentlemen,
whoa.
I picked up the check, and believe you'll give me an extra stipend next week in this regard, Mr. Isbitz, but I did pick up the check. Now, I was having breakfast with my my darling wife of 36 years, and before she got to the restaurant, some stranger starts walking in. He's 6'4", he looks a little familiar. He got a little closer, I realized it was Cameron Brate. I go, what are you doing here? He goes, well, I just talked to a bunch of grade school children and, one of the primary schools. He goes, what are you doing here? I said, I'm from up here. Up here? This is the middle of nowhere. It took me more than an hour to get here.
What would Trump call it?
What's going on? Never mind that. Never mind that, Lee. He sat down, and then when my wife showed up, they had given his table away at that point. So I said, hey, come sit with us. And he was more than happy to. He didn't want to sit by himself in a strange city that he thought was in the middle of Zanzibar or something.
Zanzibar.
And,
be careful.
We had a nice chat for an hour.
Be careful.
Nice chat for an hour. Talking about all things Bucks. He's very happy. He's glad Cutter's coming back. He doesn't have any reason to think he's not coming back, even though I think he's a restricted free agent league.
Oh, they love him.
And, yeah, I asked him what kind of guy O.J. Howard is. He thinks Howard's a great guy.
Yeah, we know you talked a lot to him. He has off-the-record stuff.
So, yeah, a lot of off-the-record stuff, but he's a straight shooter. And as I told my wife, and I think all of us would agree, he is a go-to guy in the Buck locker room. And I told him that. And I go, Cam, the one thing you got to remember is everybody wants to talk after a win. Everybody wants to talk. But after a loss, you go to the guy and he goes, let me take a shower first. Then you go to talk to the other guy, and you look back 8 minutes later, and that first guy, all his clothes are gone, you know, from his stall, gone. Brate's one of those guys, and he's not alone. Dotson, McDonald's, great.
Well, my favorite about guys.
These are go-to guys, and you got to have them, Steve.
One of these days, Ira, somebody's going to give you that shower line, and you're going to take off your shirt and say, I'm coming in with you.
I'm not going that far, even though you compare me to a mollusk coming into somebody and going – you know, heads up. What do you got to say?
Well,
about
players talking and not talking after wins and losses. LeGarrette Blount, if he got his touches, didn't matter if they lost by 40. He was always willing to talk.
That's why we had a problem with LeGarrette Blount.
If he didn't get his touches and the Bucks won, and I saw it, he didn't even take a shower. He bolted out of that locker room, man. He took a shower at home.
You know what? That attitude reminds me of Keyshawn Johnson. That's the way I always looked at Keyshawn Johnson. If he got his touches, if he got his 7 catches, he's okay. If the Bucks won and he got 2 catches for 23 yards, he's a miserable son of a gun. That's the difference between him and Sapp. I always sided with Sapp.
Again, if the Bucks would win and LeGarrette Blount wasn't getting his touches, not only did he leave the field immediately, he was out the lot. I mean, boom. You know, they had the cooling off period. You'd see him. You know where it is.
It's like you when you do a bad podcast, Steve. You bolt right away.
Well, speaking of intense analyzing and reporting, I'm going to use my journalistic skills here, Ira, and estimate that Cameron Brate didn't have much for breakfast. Otherwise, you wouldn't have picked up the check. Now, my assumption is a guy who's 6'4", 260, who always says he's trying to put on weight because he's not the biggest build naturally. I would have thought he'd be eating, you know, 6 eggs, double dose of pancakes, whatever. So I'm guessing he didn't do that. Otherwise, you wouldn't have picked it up.
Steve, you're doing a lot better in picking breakfast than you are in picking these playoff games because, Lee, while I'm gorging myself on pancakes, 2 eggs over easy, and maybe a little corned beef hash, I look over at Mr. Brate. Oatmeal, gentlemen. Uh-huh. Oatmeal with some bran in there and a couple eggs on the side. And and it all went into one big check, one check for the table, which my wife took care of.
Your wife took care of.
All right, get
so
out of
here.
So
I can see Ira.
Unbelievable, Ira.